Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Yeah, it's Wednesday, 5 o'clock here, New York City. Yep, I'm in the house. There's snow outside. There's probably snow outside where you are, too. I think it's snowing all over the place. You know why it's so cold? I bet you didn't realize why it's so cold. That's because the New Orleans Saints were in the Super Bowl. And they kept saying for years, the New Orleans Saints will be in the Super Bowl when hell freezes over. Well, I guess it did. Plus, it's frozen all over the place. They've been getting it down there. Well, that's why they're getting it down there, I guess. Well, this is going to be a show. Well, going back to Shreveport, Louisiana, and we're going to be talking with some of the restaurants. One of them is Ristorante Giuseppe. How good can Italian food be in that neck of the woods, I wonder? And then we have a King Cake. What is King Cake? Well, this has to do with the Mardi Gras, and, well, Gary from Julianne's may be the person to tell us about one of the tastiest examples of King Cake. And then we go to Bayou Food. Yes, that's crawfish. And with Crawdaddy's Kitchen. But needless to say, first, I have a message from Moho. Okay, I'm going to play the sponsor anyway, even though I have the King Cake here. What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale. Yeah, and you can get these brownies at brownies.com. Well, I don't know what they're doing next because Valentine's is over. But check it out, because I think they do have a sale going on. Let's see. Nope, don't have it in front of me. But I know they got a sale going on, and you know, should definitely take advantage when they have any kind of a sale on their wonderful-tasting brownies. Well, I'm going to play a little of down there in Shreveport, in that area, and I'm sure in other parts of Louisiana. They have music called Zydeco music, and I'm going to play a little of that. I have a song, Buckwheat. This is the best of Buckwheat Zydeco, the Millennium Collection. Yeah, and so here is one of the songs, Five Card Stud.
Well, if you want to play with me, this is the way you're gonna have to be.
Here we go again. Now what you gonna do?
Take a break in the music because we're now going to talk about the restaurant, Ristorante Giuseppe. And you're on the air.
Sweet. Hello, New York.
Hi. Well, the world is listening to you.
The world.
Yeah.
Hello, world.
Did you get my email or it didn't get through?
I didn't get it, honey. I didn't get it. It's okay. You're talking to me now. Let's talk.
Okay. So, wow. Italian restaurant.
That's right.
Shreveport. How did this all start that you even went to Shreveport?
It's a long story.
Introduce yourself to everybody.
Sure. Hello, everybody. My name is Gioacchino Brucia is my last name, but I go by Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, hello. My father is the chef owner of Ristorante Giuseppe here in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
And we've been... We've had several different restaurants since my father and my mother landed here. with two girls, two suitcases, and just about $250 in his pocket, with an agreement to open a restaurant, and he was able to do so. And the first place was called Firenze, Florence, back in 76, and then I was born in 77 here. I'm the only child born here, the youngest of three.
When you say that, you mean when you landed here, landed meaning you were coming to Shreveport?
No, yeah, of course. They had plans on coming, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, and I'm curious, like, why? Like, why Shreveport?
Yeah, I'm still asking that same question 32 years later.
Yeah.
When they got here, there was literally nothing here. I mean, as far as Italian food was concerned, I mean, there were some mom-and-pop third, fourth-generation Italian places, with spaghetti meatballs and just kind of doing the best that they could. But there was no first-generation, fresh off the boat Italian chef here really doing it up, because my dad has a very northern Italian training, because he lived in Milan for so many years, but he also worked in Zurich, Switzerland, and with many different French chefs as well. So his life is food and cuisine, if you will. He's really, he loves to do really over the top, high end, cuisine, and he started to do that here, and then he quickly learned that he couldn't really go too nuts, because people in Shreveport really didn't know, really didn't get it at first, but they wowed him, they pretty much have been wowing him for, about 35, 36 years now, so.
But now this, the restaurant at, Ristorante Giuseppe, is that, how old is that restaurant?
It's 3 years, we've been open for 3 years now.
Okay,
we opened,
so you've had other restaurants prior to that?
Yes.
And all in Shreveport?
All in Shreveport, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So in other words, so what was the first one started out as, what restaurant, and like what was it like, kind of thing?
It was called Firenze,
yeah.
And everyone called it Firenze's, if you will.
Right.
And it was just, the staff was pretty much all Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people actually spoke good English. They did, everything was table side with a cart. I mean, they flambéed, and they did, they did Bananas Foster, and they did what's it called, Chateaubriand steak, and they did tableside Caesar.
Yeah.
Pardon? What's that?
And Caesar salad too, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They would actually, they went so far out of their way to, they would wheel a cart out, and they had all of the ingredients to make the dressing, and they would actually whip up the dressing. They would, squash the anchovies, and then they would put in the fresh mayonnaise. I mean, they really put, they put it on for the people, and people were like, "Where the hell are we?" It was really over the top for Shreveport, but they gravitated towards it and loved it. And then in 1982, they got an opportunity, and I say my father and his cousin Vincent Campanella is his last name. They started Firenze's, and then they had this opportunity to buy this old Victorian house across the street from Firenze's, and they fixed it up. And they started a private dining club called the Cambridge Club. And it was membership only, and all the who's who of Shreveport became members. All the clientele that they'd gathered over the years, they became members, and that the membership grew and grew and grew, and they were just doing all kinds of crazy food. I mean, just you name it, high-end wines, the highest-end food and the highest-end wines anywhere near here, and people would come from all over the world. I mean, we fed Bill Clinton, John Wayne when he was in town, ate here.
While he was alive, I guess.
While he was alive, yeah. Mm-hmm. Several celebrities, a lot of political figures, and all of Shreveport's who's who, and a lot of people from Dallas would drive in and stuff, so.
And then?
And then that lasted from 82 until 2000. Before that, let's see, in 86, they opened what's called the Olive Street Bistro, which is a little pizzeria, kind of trattoria restaurant, that's still open today. We still own the land and the property, but we have someone that's renting the business from us, if that makes any sense.
Got it.
And so we're the landlord now only. He runs it as he sees fit, but that's still up and running. But we had that from 86 until right before we opened this in 2006. But the Cambridge Club went down because my father and Vincent kind of parted ways. They had a divorce, so to speak, after so many years. I don't think they could – they just learned that they were better off separating, like fiery Italians do after so many years. And they couldn't really work together. And Vincent took the Cambridge Club. My dad took the Bistro. And Vincent quickly sold it to a new owner. And then they, you know, 8 years later or 9 years later, the restaurant is closed. The private club is now closed. It's not open for business anymore.
So this is the only one that's open that has to do with your either Vincent or your father.
Exactly. Just us. Vincent is retired and traveling and making everybody jealous. Because he just pops in. I mean, they're friends now. You know, they had a falling out. They probably didn't. I don't think they spoke for 2 years. Then they kissed and made up, and now Vincent just travels and pops in, has a bowl of soup. He busts some chops, and then he leaves.
Oh, okay.
You know, basically.
And now, in terms of the cuisine, by the way, I do miss, like, going to a restaurant and having my Caesar salad, like, table side.
Oh, yeah.
That's really, I mean, it's just watching it or the, you know, bananas Foster and things like that. That's so cool.
Unfortunately, I mean, I see that it's not done as often nowadays. It's kind of a dying art form. Has everything to do with time issue.
Yeah.
People are always in a hurry nowadays, and, you know, the food takes a little bit too long, or they're talking and they don't want any distractions. I mean, there's so many different variables, but for the most part, I mean, you know, people like you and me, I can appreciate it because I grew up watching it and I love it. But for the most part, it's kind of lost on people, unfortunately, I think, down here anyway.
Yeah, and I'm curious. Let's say if I, being at your restaurant, if I mean, I couldn't, like, request saying, you know, can it be made tableside?
They
even do that.
Look, Merle, you can request anything in life, you know.
Yeah,
but we you know, miracles we cannot do, honey. We just can't.
Okay.
No. I mean, for you, Merle, we would do something special. You know, we would make you feel special because, you know, because you're Merle Exit. But any Joe Blow comes in here and says, "Hey, I want a tableside Caesar," we'll look at him like he's crazy and say,
right,
"Sir, I'm sorry, we don't do that."
Well, you can come over and watch us do it in the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. I forgot to mention that we have a wide open show kitchen here at the restaurant. I mean, you can even see pictures of it online.
Like Hell's Kitchen, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's as state-of-the-art, if you will. I mean, my dad bought it. I don't know. I can't believe he bought it and spent as much money as he did on it, but that's neither here nor there now. But it's a state-of-the-art Demanincourt kitchen, and it's about as high-end as you can get. We've got two Rationale ovens, which are basically computerized ovens that are just phenomenal. I mean, all serious commercial kitchens have these kind of ovens. You can set them to do pretty much anything. I mean, it's just nuts the amount of things that these ovens can do. We're tricked out. I mean, you've seen that show Pimp My Ride on MTV?
No, I haven't seen that.
You know the show where somebody who drives a car that's just an absolute piece of you-know-what, and then
They
fix it up for them and turn it into, you know, just an amazing car? Well, our kitchen's like, it's like Pimp My Kitchen when you walk in here, you know. It's really tricked out.
I only did a quick thing there. There's nothing like that. There are seats, like some place you could sit and actually watch, right? There's no view from a table or anything.
You're talking about like a chef's table, right?
We have
a table that we consider the chef's table. That's over to the side, and it's like right next to the kitchen. We also have a big round table right in front of the kitchen and the hotline right there. And the people request that table so that they can watch all the action and watch the chefs.
I guess the next time I get down there, I'll have to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I wanted to recommend that, but we got a little busy and I didn't have time. But Next time, yeah, next time you come, you're sitting right there. That way you can watch and take pictures of the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that definitely have to do that. And so what I want to get into is the cuisine. Now, do you think, like, the cuisine has changed from the first restaurant till now?
You know what? It has slightly. Nothing too dramatic. You know, at the first restaurant, my dad was doing, like I said, a lot of, you know, over-the-top stuff. Because it was a smaller venue.
Mm-hmm.
The restaurant was elegant, but it was small, you know, and he could afford to spend more money on those kind of ingredients, okay? Now, this restaurant is, you know, it's over 10,000 square feet. I mean, it's absolutely enormous. And
yeah,
we just can't really go out of our way unless it's like a special dinner, you know, for example, like Valentine's Day. We did a special set menu only, and we did three courses for cheap, for $45 a person, and the choices were just really nice. And we had veal, and we had what else did he do? He did this amazing beef short rib ravioli, big raviolone, with lentil beans and like a demi glace and crab souffle. I mean, he really went nuts, but. Here at in this big restaurant, though, we have to in order to stay alive, we have to kind of cater to the masses. excuse me. And people in Shreveport, they're not really ready for too over the top cuisine, you know. And then and right now they don't want to pay the money to pay for the really high end stuff anyway, you know. Foie gras and all these different ingredients, they don't really go over here as of now.
Yeah.
So we just, you know, we don't do it unless it's a special dinner.
What you do, you make your own pasta?
We make every noodle in-house, yes. We've got a whole section, and we have a woman, a couple ladies that come in, and that's all they do is they roll out and make pasta from scratch.
What are the various pastas that,
We make a, you know, like a normal semolina white spaghetti.
Okay.
We make a spinach tagliolini, which is basically like a spaghetti noodle, if you will, but made of spinach.
Mm-hmm.
We do our own tortellini. We do a salmon.
And the tortellini has cheese in it or not?
Meat.
Okay, so it's a meat tortellini, yeah.
Yeah, and then we do a salmon ravioli that we serve with like a tomato cream sauce, we call it Aurora sauce, with a little bit of basil. It's really nice, really light. We also do macaroni. We do our own homemade macaroni with like a tomato shrimp, kind of like a fra diavola sauce, if you will. We do our angel hair. We do a lot of angel hair. And we serve that with a fresh basil diced tomato sauce, you know, touch of garlic. You know,
oh, I know what I had. The pasta I had was the lamb sauce. What did I have? Fettuccine?
Okay, yeah, there you go. And fettuccine. I forgot to mention the fettuccine. We do fettuccine with a lamb sauce that has chunks of lamb that are stewed in the tomato sauce. That's what you had.
Yeah, I had that because it's not the most usual thing.
Right.
Go to an Italian restaurant and have lamb.
Right.
Yeah, so I said, let's do this one.
No, we sell a ton of lamb. We also do a grilled lamb chop. You get three nice lamb chops that are grilled with a raspberry reduction sauce with a little bit of shallots in the sauce, and the sauce is just phenomenal. And we make our own demi-glace, or stock, if you will. We call it demi-glace, but it's just kind of what it actually is. It's veal stock, and we're constantly making fresh batches of both veal and fish stock.
That, you know, it's interesting that you say that you made a veal stock. When I went to, I did a day at boot camp at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park. And while we were in the kitchen, without Dinah, someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Now, while we were there, the thing that was, I guess, stressed, because I forgot what somebody was making, but there was a veal stock being used.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that instead of beef, and I forgot why veal versus beef.
You can certainly use beef, there would be absolutely nothing wrong with that. Veal just has a slightly different flavor, and it adds more to your sauce at the end of the day.
Okay.
But you know.
Yeah, because also he was also discussing the fact that when you're making stocks, and because you're making stocks from the bones, that the bones, the marrows, I guess, had some already salt in
mm-hmm.
them.
Oh, yeah, they have sodium in them already. Yeah. And the meat itself has sodium in it as well.
Yeah, and so you don't have to add as much salt.
No, you don't. And you undersalt it on purpose, because as you're finishing your sauce, you know, you what we do is we throw in a little bit of salt to flavor it as we go along.
Right.
If we had a salty stock, well, chances are you can oversalt. You know, you can always oversalt, and you can always add salt. You can't take it away. You know, rule of thumb. So that's why we go about it that way.
Now, I want to get into in terms of the appetizers. Well,
okay.
One of the things I think we talked about that you make your own mozzarella?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, mm-hmm. when you say you make your own mozzarella, because
mm-hmm.
I have a place near my house that
mm-hmm.
makes their own mozzarella, and the
right.
guy actually
huh?
starts from the milk. He gets the
right.
milk from a farm
okay.
and makes his own starts from the milk and makes mozzarella and the ricotta cheese.
Right.
But you're not doing that.
We're not doing ricotta. We do goat cheese. We do mozzarella and goat cheese from scratch, yes.
Really? So,
mm-hmm.
in other words, so when you're making the mozzarella, you are starting from the milk and you're not starting from milk curd.
We buy the curd.
Okay, so you're buying the curd.
And we buy the milk and then we go through the process. I don't know exactly. I've never made it myself.
Oh, okay.
So I don't. Oh, have you?
Yeah.
It's super neat. But yeah, we have a guy in the back that's been with my dad for, 30 something years.
Uh-huh.
His name is Giuseppe too, but everyone calls him Pepino as a nickname.
Okay.
And he's a big guy and he doesn't talk much. Always with a toothpick in his mouth, you know, and he's down there just constantly prepping. That's what he does all day long, is prep. He perforates all the meat. He cleans all the fish. He makes the mozzarella. He makes the goat cheese. You name it, he knows how to do it, and 9 times out of 10, he's doing it. He's like, you know, pretty much the butcher, the backbone, and sometimes every now and again when we're busy, he goes on to the line, and he cooks as well.
Now, when you say in terms of the goat cheese, so mm-hmm. He's making
he buys the goat
cheese.
Milk.
So
uh-huh.
he's buying from the milk and then
mm-hmm.
making the goat cheese from the milk.
That's
so
right.
That must
that's
be
right.
interesting. Do you know
yeah.
how that's done? I'm curious. Like, what
it's really
it?
Mild, the cheese
yeah.
that we do. It's super
thank
mild.
God.
And yeah, and we use it to stuff. What we do is we take the goat cheese. We have two dishes, I think, that we use goat cheese on. One is we butterfly a shrimp, a large jumbo shrimp, and we stuff it with goat cheese, and we wrap it in prosciutto. And then we saute it off, and then we make these little buns, these little breads, if you will. We cut the bread in half, and after we saute off the shrimp and we stick it in the oven on top of the bun, it crisps up the bun, crisps up the prosciutto around the shrimp, and then we ladle a brandy. It's a brandy butter type sauce on top of it. It's really popular, and we sell a lot of that.
Do you deliver?
Nah, yeah. I'll cook some off, freeze it, and I'll FedEx it to you. How about that?
Well, I got a king cake today.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you get the baby?
I didn't get the baby. I've been making fun of the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm finding the whole thing quite humorous. I
sure.
didn't find it humorous until I realized that the baby's supposed to be baby Jesus.
Right.
And I think that's all.
You didn't know that?
Well, I didn't even know kink.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. But then
when I'm reading this whole thing, I'm thinking, I'm really going, well, as a comedian,
right.
my brain's going off and thinking all kinds of funny things about, you
sure.
know, because it's baby Jesus.
Yeah, sure.
And, but you anyway.
Know, whenever you're cutting the cake, you just got to make sure you don't cut Jesus in half. You know, that
yeah.
would be, that's the big no-no.
That's sure, unless that, isn't that stigmata? No.
That's, yeah, exactly. That's a year of bad luck or something like that, I think. I don't know the rules either, but.
Yeah. anyway, yeah, so I got a king cake, so you could always send me stuff. I have no problem with that.
No, yeah, I'm sure you don't. No, that's no problem. Yeah, I'll tell Chef.
Then there was, we talked about you also, before I get into the other things, you also make your own gelato.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we make gelato and sorbet. And yeah, I mean, Chef bought some bases, if you will, from Italy, and we use the bases sometimes in our gelato, but we also freshly squeeze juices and like the other day he made a blood orange gelato, which is just out of this world. Our pastry guy is just phenomenal. And so yeah, we do all of our pastries as well. We make our own gelato, and we make tiramisu. We make this dessert called strawberry fiore, which means flower. It's like a strawberry flower, which is a almond laced shell, shaped like in a nest. And we drizzle some zabaione cream, some dark chocolate, and apricot glaze on the strawberries that go into this little pouch, if you will. And it's just it's really popular. Really popular.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious when you the ingredients that you're getting from Italy for the gelato, mm-hmm. is it a particular company?
It is. The name eludes me right now.
And if I say it's not Fabri, is it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it is Fabri. No.
Okay. You Fabri over here because how close can they get?
Right.
They're about like 10. Oh, okay. Maybe 10 miles away from my house.
Right. No,
they
it's
opened up their North American plant over here.
Nice. No, I'm pretty sure it's not Fabri.
Yeah,
I
got to go over there and learn how to make gelato too.
Yeah.
But I didn't do the hot process, which I
right.
did. Yeah. And you're doing the cold process.
We're doing the cold process. Yes.
Yeah. And I just find that it makes a difference.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
But it's hard to do a hot. I mean, unless you're specializing in gelato.
Well, you know, plus I'm paying this guy by the hour and
yeah, right.
You know, he's got a ton of things. He makes all the bread.
Yeah, right.
He's a busy bee over there, so we don't go too nuts with the gelato. But people love it.
Oh, yeah. It's all made from milk, so you don't have to And by the way, the blood orange,
mm-hmm.
I'm there's nothing like the blood oranges that are in Italy though.
No, that's right.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
When I was there, I went to, twist my arm. I had to go on a press trip.
Yeah, poor you.
Yeah, so I went to Naples and then the Amalfi Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to have pizza for the first time.
Oh, God.
You know, real.
Pizza Napoli. So good. So good.
Now I know what pizza is supposed to taste like.
Oh,
but,
sure.
Yeah, and the consistency, too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I love it. I die for good pizza.
And then we went to a place where they made what's that? That lemon.
Limoncello.
Yes.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
And the guy there, like you know, we saw from scratch where he's got the lemons.
Right.
And it's interesting because it's not the can't use the same lemons that we have here.
Right.
You know.
I mean, you can. I mean, and
you can, but it you know there's. You
not
know,
quite, right.
Yeah, they're sweet lemons. That's what they pretty much are, you know, large sweet lemons.
Yeah, exactly.
So we got to do it. So we do the best we can, you know.
Yeah, with the ingredients you do the best you can.
You know, it's like sometimes that people, even when they do key lime pie, some
mm-hmm.
people substitute a regular lime. Think
right.
They get away with it, you know.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
know what I mean? Oh, but anyway, let's go back to your menu. Okay.
Okay.
So let's on the appetizers. What are some of the other appetizers you have?
Okay. We do the mozzarella.
By the way, I just want to let you. I have a napkin next to me because you know the little drools.
Yeah.
Come down the side of my. Yeah. Okay.
Stop drooling, Merle. Stop drooling.
Yeah.
No, we've got a. Let's see what we do. We do a mozzarella. We call it mozzarella vegetariana, which is a vegetarian dish. It's got slices of mozzarella layered in between grilled eggplant and zucchini and like tomato slices that are tomato confit, which is you de-seed the tomatoes and skin the tomatoes, and you basically get the meat of the flesh. Of the tomato, and it just adds a different flavor, and you know with a little bit of olive oil and pesto, we make our own pesto, salt, pepper. That's it. Very simple, but very very good. We've got just a simple Mista salad with mixed field greens with a delicious vinaigrette, though. We do a honey, touch of Dijon mustard type vinaigrette. It's slightly sweet. It's pretty popular. Our Caesar salad is really popular, you know, which is just basically your standard Caesar. And let's see, other apps. What do we do?
Wait a minute. Esther wants to say hello.
Oh, hey. Let's put him in a pot.
Oh, no.
See, now you got me drooling, bro.
Yeah.
And another really popular one, we believe it or not, we do a killer mini burger. We do three little mini burgers, really good cut of meat, little, you know, burgers that we grill off, and we do it in this like dipping sauce with these little buns, and people just love them. I mean, it's really good. It's a very Americana dish.
So people are dipping their buns in there,
People are dipping their buns. Yes, they are.
Are you getting your own meat and chopping it up?
Yeah. We buy the meat already ground. You know.
Oh, okay.
We buy the meat already ground. We don't go too nuts on the mini burgers, but it's good meat.
I got a chopper in my house.
Oh yeah. I bet you do.
I got every kind of thing in my house to cook with.
I bet you do. Well, if I'm ever in New York, I need to cook for you.
Oh, okay.
That'd be fun.
Oh yeah.
We could open a little bottle of wine, you know, Merle, just me and you. You never know.
Well, the Rubber Chicken Forest is sending me two bottles of wine along with Esther's identical twin too.
Nice. Very nice.
So, but one of the questions I have, maybe you can answer this. I'm always trying to think of, like, it looks so easy or it sounds so easy to make tomato soup.
Right.
Do you always have to use a tomato paste when you make tomato soup?
Absolutely not. No, I don't. I don't like tomato paste that much. I mean, I'll use it in a recipe that absolutely has to have it. I mean, we use it for our stock, you know, because you have to put it in stock. But, you know, like a good tomato basil soup, I mean, you could certainly use a little bit, but I prefer not to. I don't like too much of that tomato paste flavor by itself.
If you're not, tell me how. I mean, I think what I'm trying to figure out is, what do I have to do with the tomatoes to make a tomato soup?
Okay, well, you're firing all these questions at me like I'm the chef here. I'm the front guy, you know.
I know how to cook.
I definitely do. I mean, I have a degree from ICE in New York, Institute of Culinary Education. I had as my chef, and if she's listening, I think she'll get a kick out of this. But Anne Burrell was my chef for my I think it was my third month or my fourth month. She's got her own cooking show on the Food Network. She's the one with the blonde crazy hair.
Oh yeah.
And she's really, you know, kind of fiery and passionate and, you know, kind of loud, if you will. But she was super cool. And but anyway, tomato soup, let's see.
In other words, I guess what I'm asking, when you're making something like a tomato soup, are you first, you have to, are you taking out the seeds?
I'm going to skin it and take the seeds out, yes.
Okay.
Because I don't want to crunch on a seed, and I don't want that bitter flavor that the seeds give off.
Okay. So in other words, you pretty much need to do that to make the soup, as opposed to... that'll make the meat of it versus, like, so you don't have to use a tomato paste.
Right. And then the tomatoes make all the difference. The fresher and the better smelling tomatoes will make or break the soup for you, you know.
And does it matter, like, the type of tomato?
It depends on what kind of tomatoes you want to make. I mean, you know. You could use a amazing Roma tomatoes. You could use a big beefsteak tomato that's in season. You know, you could use any kind of tomato you want. You could use yellow. You could use green. I mean, depending if you like the flavor of them. But it all comes down to the quality of the tomatoes and the ingredients that you put in, and the method in which you do it. You know, and before you puree it, make sure that you're going to use a vegetable stock, or you can use a good chicken stock. You could even use a beef or veal stock if you like, or you know, broth if you will. And then
so when you're making a tomato soup, it's not vegetarian. You're using a...
You can certainly make it that way. You know, it depends on you. It depends on how you want to make it. There's so many different things you can do.
Right. But it, but in other words, the it makes it tastier to use a stock that's a, you know, beef meat or whatever, chicken or something.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, in my opinion, it gives it slightly different flavor. It takes it kind of in a different direction. But typically, tomato soups are 100% vegetarian and vegan, you know, unless they, you know, if you do a cream of tomato soup, well, that changes things, you know.
Mm.
But,
Okay, I'm just curious because I was thinking about that today in terms of, like, you know, I don't have tomatoes in the house at the moment, but it occurred to me that that's something I was trying to think about. That it sounded like such an easy item to make.
It is. It's super easy, you know. Just basically get you some fresh tomatoes, one or two cloves of garlic if you like garlic, which I do, about half an onion, and just kind of sweat the onions, throw in the garlic after, let me get the garlic nice and happy, and then chop up your seeded, skinned tomatoes. And an easy way to achieve that is if you can create like a you don't have to go out of your way to chop it like a concassé, but basically you can score an X on your tomato, drop it in some boiling water, and then leave it in the water for about 10, 15 seconds and pull it out. It makes it super easy to peel. The peel kind of comes off of it, and you just kind of take it right off.
I learned that at boot camp, too.
There you go. There you go.
We were shown that.
Cut the tomato in half, take the seeds out.
Right.
And then just drop it in. You can quarter them. Drop it into your sautéed onions and garlic, and then wait about, you know, let them sauté for just a little bit of time. And then and then add your stock or your vegetarian broth. Bring it to a boil. Reduce it down to a simmer. BTB RTS, as they say. And then that's it. You just kind of let it simmer there for a good 20, maybe. A good 20 minutes is definitely more than enough time, and then blend it. But yeah, add your basil in at the end. Add your basil in. Three or four nice, you know, depending on how basil-y you want it, salt and pepper to taste, and then blend it. You're good to go. You got a great little soup. Simple.
Good. All right.
You can even add a little sugar.
That takes away the bit of the acidity.
That's right. That's exactly right.
All right, let's get into what are the soups that you make? What soups do you make?
We do a bean soup. It's called our Venetian bean soup that, believe it or not, he makes with pinto beans, and it's so good. It's like a really rustic bean soup, but what they do is they start off by sautéing some good olive oil with a bunch of garlic and rosemary in the pan so that it flavors the oil. So the oil just absorbs that strong rosemary and garlic flavor. And we also put a little bit of prosciutto into the soup before we blend it with a little bit of the beans, because we have a blended bean and olive oil kind of base. Prosciutto, too, is in the base. And then we cook off the beans and we add it to the soup with a little bit of chicken broth, and just keep adding the broth until it's to the thickness that we like, and we serve it with a little bit of pasta that we cut up, and we just put a little pasta in there. It's like a really rustic pasta fagioli / soup, and it's really good.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you deliver? Oh, no, I
asked. No, you already asked that, honey. Not to New York, I'm sorry.
Okay. And what other items of like the appetizer? Did we miss anything like that? That you need to like to make me continue drooling, or just should we go on to entrees?
We do an amazing shrimp soup as well. You know, I did miss one. Smoked salmon. We do an amazing smoked salmon.
You cold smoke it?
We cold smoke it. Excuse me. Everything from scratch. We cold smoke it. Yes, we do. We brine it. We get the salmon in whole. We perforate the salmon. And then we brine it. And then when it's ready, we throw it in a smoker. And then we slice it to order. And we serve it with some little bit of onion, capers, a drizzle of olive oil, and lemon juice. salt, pepper, and with toast. We would do a special toast that we serve with it as well.
And who do you toast to?
Pardon?
Who do you toast to?
Who do we toast to? Yes, we toast to the salmon god.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, for it being so good. You know.
Good.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So now...
Couldn't think
of
anything else.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to find out who's like... who's... We got somebody else that's on the air. I just want to know if... are you drooling too?
Am I?
No, I don't mean... We have somebody else that called
it.
Who's there?
Hello.
Yeah.
This is Lewis with Crawdaddy's Kitchen in Shreveport.
Hey.
Hi.
What's up, Lewis?
Well, laryngitis. To be real honest with you.
Oh, I can hear.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
But I am here. What's left of me.
All right. I'll hang on. Well, hang on while I continue talking. Talking Italian food, and I'll do my best when we're talking to answer the questions I'll ask you.
Well, you've got a lot of information from being here.
Yeah.
For the Mardi Gras weekend, so
okay.
Go ahead.
Back to the entrees. Okay, let's go to the entrees now.
Okay.
What are the entrees you have, Joe?
Okay, well, you know, we've got, we've got the lamb chops, like I said earlier, with the raspberry reduction. We've got a wonderful ribeye steak, 14-ounce, with a mushroom, honey, and red wine reduction. And it's this really nice, thick, beautiful sauce. Our sauces are what kind of make our dishes. I mean, Chef is... really, really good saucier. He's really big on sauce, just to dress up the meat, you know. He's got a good cut of meat, but we grill it off, and then we get the sauce ready, and we just drizzle it. We pour it over the top, and people really like the steak. We do a stuffed quail that is wrapped in bacon, the whole quail. We stuff the quail with a little bit of crab meat, like a crab meat and... forget what kind of stuffing it is, but it's a really light, soft, kind of crab meat based stuffing. And we serve that on we saute it off, and we bake the quail, and we serve it on top of a risotto cake that's called a risotto galletta, which is basically a round cut of risotto that's pre-cooked, and we sear both sides of the crab of the risotto so it's nice and crispy. And we serve that. We serve the quail on top of it, and we put a port wine reduction sauce around it, like a good bit of sauce, and it's just really, really good. Let me
get over now to the poor old Crawdaddy's Kitchen. Because,
sure.
Yeah.
Hey, Merle.
Yeah.
Dinner rush in 5 minutes, honey.
Okay. All right, I'll let you go then.
Okay, sweetie.
All right, that's
hey.
A whole bunch. And what's the website?
RistauranteGiuseppe.com.
Okay, you got it.
Absolutely. Good
All
talking
right.
to you, Merle.
Same here. Have a good night.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Where is Joe?
Okay. Well, he's gone. Joe's gone.
Where is Joe located? Where is Joe located?
Ristorante. Oh, you've never been there? Ristorante Giuseppe?
Oh, in Shreveport?
In Shreveport, yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, I've been there. Yes, I've been
there.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Well, I'll do my best and have you talk too much. Okay.
And I apologize. I apologize for the voice. It's not something that I planned to have.
Yeah.
But here I am.
Well, this is the whole thing with the crawfish. Now, by the way, because I've heard they call crayfish. Is that the same thing?
It's the same thing. It's and I don't know where that pronunciation comes from, but
okay.
Everybody here, it's crawfish.
Okay. So, I guess I'm gonna. I hope you can do your best to do this. I want everybody to get that. What I did is I was at Crawdaddy's Kitchen, and actually in the kitchen.
Right.
And I wanted you, if you could possibly, like, explain the process of the way you, I mean, that's not the process of how it's cooked, because everybody does it different.
Right.
But the process of how you deal with the crawfish.
Well, first and foremost, we get the best and the freshest crawfish that we can possibly get. I have three suppliers. They're located in South Louisiana, near the Lafayette area, Southwest Shreveport. Southwest Louisiana, what's referred to as Acadiana. So then we get the crawfish, the live product in sacks. They're anywhere from 35 to 40 pounds per sack. We take those in. Of course, we refrigerate them. And when we're ready to cook, we take a sack or two or maybe three, depending on the day and the time. And we clean them. We thoroughly clean the crawfish at least two times, because the other name for a crawfish is a mud bug. And
right.
it gets its name, honestly, because they do live in the mud. These crawfish are generally pond raised. So even though they are, their habitat is mud and ponds. These are rice ponds that are flooded during the off season when you're not planting and harvesting rice.
Mm-hmm.
The second crop and probably the most profitable crop is the crawfish. So anyway,
let me just ask you when you the first time you're cleaning them off, are you just putting it in? In hot or cold water or boiling
cold water.
Mm-hmm.
We have a large commercial double sink in our crawfish cage. And like I said, we fill the sinks up and keep the water running do that twice, at least twice, sometimes three times. So once the crawfish are cleaned, we then put them in the crawfish baskets, and these baskets will hold anywhere from 150 to 200 pounds of crawfish.
Wow.
So our first step is to boil the crawfish for about 4 to 5 minutes. It's a very quick process as far as actually cooking the crawfish. And that's something that anybody can do. You put them in the basket, boil in water, drop them in 4 to 5 minutes. After you do that, and the most important step is our next step, which we do. I don't know of anyone else that does this, but we learn this from the crawfish cookers in South Louisiana. We drop the baskets into another vat of seasoned water. And this water is at anywhere from 140 to 160 degrees with all of our seasonings. When you put the super hot crawfish that have just been boiled into this somewhat cooler pot, the crawfish shell slightly separates, and so the seasoning is basically sucked into the tail and the head of the crawfish. And we soak these crawfish in this mixture for 20 minutes. Once they're done, once they've soaked, we take them out. We have large igloo-type ice chest. We drop them in there steaming hot, and they're ready to serve and ready to eat, as you well know.
Right. Now, I want to ask you, and you don't have to tell me all of the ingredients, but what are the basic spices that you use?
We use a liquid crawfish boil. We use a powdered crawfish boil. And then we use China red pepper, which is similar to cayenne. It would probably be in the same family.
Right.
But this is called China Red. I don't think it comes from China. I think it's a product from South Louisiana. But those are the three primary ingredients that go into the boiling water.
So you're not making up your entire seasoning. In other words, you're getting these two crawfish oil.
We get the products, but then we have our own recipe for the mixture itself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so we it's just like any other recipe that you would have that you cook with. We follow that recipe so that the crawfish basically are going to have the same seasoning batch after batch after batch.
Right. Okay. I'm going to because I think probably, I don't know if somebody's calling in or not, but hang on a second, okay?
Okay.
Because I'm going to play a little music in the meantime.
All right.
Night like this, I'm so glad you came around.
Okay, I'm back. Have to play a little.
I like that CD that you got there.
Yeah. I wonder where I got it.
I wonder where you bought that CD.
Yeah. You sell
pretty
it.
Good stuff. Pretty good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the Buckwheat Zydeco.
Buckwheat Zydeco. He is world famous Zydeco.
Yeah, you. I know you sell that there too, huh?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, let's go. Back to this. Okay, and then so if somebody is eating, I mean, it's hard to explain, I guess, how to eat crawfish. I mean, I basically, if I said, okay, you got to learn how to twist the head off.
You twist
the head off of it, and then if you want, you could suck the head, and that would
a lot of hot seasoning in that part.
Right, and but you beware.
Yes, beware.
That's the peppery part.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then you're taking off like a piece of the shell around the top of the tail.
About the first two little sections of the shell itself.
And then you put the meat in your teeth as you squeeze the tail from the bottom, pushing it up.
Squeeze the bottom, and that's where the expression down here is suck the head, pinch the tail. And that's what we're referring to. You pinch the very bottom of the tail where the meat is, and that helps to push the meat in, and you're pulling with your teeth. It's real simple, quick process.
Right. The average person, like eating, you know, I mean, you're getting a lot of, you're getting a lot of shell.
Right.
In the product. So in order to get enough to eat, although, you know, like being kept busy kind of thing helps.
It's not a quick meal. When you go to eat crawfish, you're basically planning an outing, a time to sit and talk with friends, drink beer, eat your crawfish. I would say the average time for a table that's eating just crawfish would be about 45 minutes, maybe an hour. And as soon as the crawfish is ordered, it's delivered to the table within about 5 minutes. So the other 45 to 55 minutes is spent enjoying the ambiance, the conversation, the beer, and the crawfish. So it's very leisurely activity.
If you're ordering it per person, somebody who says, I don't know how much they, what's like if you're really into just having the crawfish, what's a decent amount? What would you order?
Well, we serve two different size platters. One is a 5-pound platter, which generally most of the men will order a 5-pound platter. That comes with two red potatoes and a half of a corn cob that's also been dropped in the seasoning pot. So you're getting corn and potato that's very well seasoned also. Generally, women will go with the 3.5-pound platter. And that's, for a lot of people, that's a starter. Let me try the 5-pound platter. Well, you may go from that one platter and say, well, let me get a couple more pounds.
Right.
But that's our serving portion sizes, 3.5 pounds generally for the women, 5 pounds for the men.
Now, what I want to do is I also want to get into some of the other items that are on the menu. One of them that I offhand that I remember is the crawfish cornbread?
Crawfish cornbread.
That's interesting. Is that a common thing to make, or is that something that you got?
It's not a real common. I've seen it more in the last several years than I had before. We've been serving crawfish cornbread for about 8 years now. And this is a recipe that I happened to notice at a friend's house on his refrigerator. And I saw it, and I thought, crawfish cornbread, what is this? I looked over the recipe, and I thought, well, you know, that might be a pretty good item to try to sell. So we, with permission, took this recipe and tinkered with it, changed a little bit, did this and that with it, and basically it's one of our better and best items that we have. Basically, you start with a cornbread mix down in Louisiana and probably in a lot of the other southern states. Cornbread has a little sugar in it, so it's kind of a sweet cornbread.
Right.
Then we actually saute crawfish tails with onions and bell pepper with a little Cajun seasoning thrown in. And we mix the cornbread mix, the crawfish tails, and then a tomato, a little bit of green pepper, jalapeno pepper mixture, and we bake it. And we bake it for about 45 minutes. And then it's done, and it's one of our, like I said, one of our best dishes.
Yeah, which leads me to a question regarding this whole thing with crawfish tails. So are you like, now you're getting all these pounds and pounds of crawfish. You've got one guy that's like sitting around and taking out the tails and taking out the meat from the tails?
No. That would not be a good use of labor. Now we, for the crawfish cornbread, crawfish etouffee, fried crawfish tails, we buy the tails that are packed in 1-pound packages. They're already shelled, and they're packaged with the crawfish fat, which gives them their flavor, gives them a lot of their flavor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I wondered about that, you know, some poor person.
Yeah, that would not be an effective use of labor.
Okay. I just kind of wondered about that.
Then
there was something that had this, like there was if I want to call it a patty, no, it wasn't kind of a patty. It had a crawfish etouffee in it, in the middle that I had.
Oh, that was the stuffed pistolette.
Yeah, that's the thing,
The pistolette is a small dinner roll. It's what is the word I'm trying to think of? Well, I can't think of it right now, but it's a small dinner roll that we take the inside breading out. We actually dig that breading out, discard it, We stuff it with crawfish etouffee. We then dip it in an egg, milk sauce, and then roll it in our breading, some of our breading mix, and then we deep fry it. And that's what you had. You had the stuffed crawfish etouffee pistolette.
Okay. That was really good.
Thank you.
I remembered another thing I had. Alligator.
Yes, you did. You had the alligator.
Fried and alligator, yeah.
Yeah. And this is, you know, you think alligator, well, just like a cattle, there's different cuts. And we get the tenderloin of the alligator. And we learned this over the years when we first started. We didn't know the difference. We thought alligator was alligator. But there are different cuts, different textures. And what we use is the tenderloin of the gator. It's a white meat. And as you recall, when you were at Crawdaddy's, you felt like it didn't quite taste like chicken.
No.
It had a little bit different taste and had a little bit of different texture. But fried alligator is one of the items that I think the uniqueness for someone not from Louisiana to come in and say, hey, you know what I ate? I had some fried alligator. So that again is one of our very good selling products.
Yeah. Mm. Also, now you have also like Cajun food, and you have a couple of other, you know, it's not all just crawfish.
No. We serve two different gumbos. We serve a chicken and andouille gumbo. Andouille is a South Louisiana sausage. It's a dense sausage. It's very meaty and fairly highly seasoned. And we make a heavy, dark roux for our chicken and andouille gumbo. And we serve this over rice. We also have a seafood gumbo that is served with both shrimp and oysters. It's a lighter roux. It has the celery and vegetables like that. It's not as heavy as the chicken and andouille. Chicken and andouille is my best-selling gumbo, though. It far outsells the shrimp and oyster.
Do you have a website?
We do. CrawdaddysKitchen.com. As a matter of fact, I have a new website that should be coming up within about another week. We are on now, but we have revamped and have a fresher, newer look on our website. It'll be up in about a week, crawdaddyskitchen.com.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you don't deliver either, huh?
No. But how'd you like the king cake?
Well, at least I have to tell you, now what was the company that you use?
We purchase our king cakes from Tubbs, T-U-B-B-S.
Okay. So I was trying to compare it, Tubbs, to Julianne's. And the problem in the comparison was that I think you, like, heated it up.
I think we did, didn't we? Yes.
Yeah. And so I didn't really get that comparison, because, as a matter of fact, Gary's right on there here now, listening to this.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Hi, Gary.
Good.
Yeah.
Hey.
Well, king cakes are different depending on where you go, where you buy them, and I've had king cakes in New Orleans. I've had king cakes here. They're almost like any other recipe. There are going to be some slight variations in the taste and the the stuff in that type of thing.
Oh yeah, no, I liked it, but I was, but as I said, in trying to compare it, I didn't, you know, if, since it was like, you know, it was sort of like melted kind of thing, you know, the
with the cream cheese stuff.
Yeah, with the cream cheese, so I couldn't really do that. But yeah, I'm gonna let you go because I feel bad with your throat. And I think we got enough information, though.
I appreciate it, and again, I apologize for the voice.
Oh,
I know I sound like Marlon Brando, but...
Oh, no, it's okay. Shit happens. Don't worry.
Okay, Merle. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, at least, thank goodness I got something delivered to me, right? At least I have
There
something.
You go.
You know, I have to tell you the problem. I got to tell you what the problem is with the king, getting the king cake, because looking for the baby in it, and I'm going, well, it's not in this little slice. All right, I have another little slice. You know, so I got to watch out. I mean, I had some slices already, but what I want to first go into is this whole thing about the history of the king cake, so people understand what this is, and you know, and the whole bit. Oh, why don't you go introduce yourself to my audience first?
Oh, why bother?
Gary, are you the owner of Julianne?
No.
You're just a big shot there.
Yeah, right.
So let's, you know, do you want to talk about what the history of the king cake, or should I just read the flyer?
Why should I read the flyer? Then
oh,
I don't have
the
to put my brain in gear.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll kind of quickly, like, read this off. But it says the history of king cake.
Yeah.
In European countries, the coming of the wise men, really, okay, bearing gifts to the Christ child is celebrated 12 days after Christmas. The celebration, called Epiphany, Little Christmas, or the 12th night, is a time of exchanging gifts and feasting. I thought that was during Christmas. I thought it was supposed to be during Christmas when you start exchanging. Okay. All right, all over the world, people gather for festive 12th night celebrations.
Right.
One of the most popular customs is still the baking of a special cake in honor of the three kings, a king cake. Europeans hide a bean inside their cake. They do, huh? A bean? Okay.
Yeah.
And the person receiving the bean must portray one of the kings. You mean they have to, like, don a costume?
Evidently.
Okay. And just reading this, Latin American people put a small figure inside the cake representing the Christ child. So the Latin Americans decide, let's put a little thing of Christ instead of a bean. Okie doke. It is said, well, it's probably less easy to choke on a plastic baby than it is on a bean. It is said that a year of good fortune awaits the lucky person who gets the figure. But Louisianans like the idea.
Add a little to it.
Yeah, perpetuating the celebration by having the person who receives.
Perpetuating the sale and the good time.
The person who receives the baby continues the festivities with another party and another cake.
There you go.
Starting the 12th day after Christmas, king cake parties continue until the first day of Lent, ending on Fat Tuesday, which, by the way, used to be called Skinny Tuesday, until these king cakes started because you eat one cake, find the baby Jesus, that person has to buy another cake, and it keeps perpetuating until you're fat. And that's why it's now Fat Tuesday. Mardi Gras, king cakes were originally a simple ring of dough with little decoration. The New Orleans-style king cake is brightly decorated with colored sugars in Mardi Gras colors of purple, green, and gold. Thousands of king cakes are consumed at parties every year, making the king cake another fine Louisiana tradition.
Yes, it is.
And this is one, this is, now, as I said, I didn't really, I couldn't compare, so is it Tubbs, is that they said? What he said, Tubbs?
Yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't compare it because of the, you know, being heated. So I don't know. But anyway, and the only other one that I had, I mean, this was like, well, it was almost like coffee, plain coffee cake. It was like cinnamon, and it wasn't even a, more like a bread dough.
Right, right.
Than a cake dough. But I understand that that's typical, that people use, that some places make it as a bread dough and more like a coffee cake.
Yeah.
With, you know.
Yeah, everybody's got their own recipe and their own fillings and own icings even.
Yeah.
We
and
use
you
like
were,
a buttercream. Other
yeah.
people use, you know, like a poured icing. And
your place, you just go to hell with the with all these great things. So the one that I got, okay, I'll try to describe this. In the middle was a chocolate cream cheese. On the top is a chocolate icing with chocolate chips.
Uh-huh. I almost added some coconut to that, but I thought it might be a little over. A lot of people don't like coconut, so.
Oh, and I would have said, don't add the coconut, I'm on a diet.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The only healthy thing in it.
But you have, wow. When we were there, we had the pralines and cream. Is that the one we had?
Yeah.
No.
I think, didn't you also
you pronounce
have
the praline? Praline?
Pralines and cream.
Yeah, pralines and cream. And, and then we had the cherry.
Was it the cherry or the strawberry?
No, you're right. No, it was a strawberry. We were watching a cherry one being made, weren't we? That's
oh,
the one
geez.
I have on my YouTube. It's
okay.
Showing that. Yeah. So we had the strawberry, and we had the strawberry because, needless to say, somebody got the baby. So we had to have another cake. The problem was it wasn't too soon afterwards that we went to lunch. Do you know that none of us ordered dessert at lunch?
Oh, really?
But some particular
after two pieces of king cake? Well, did everyone enjoy the time in Shreveport, the parade? And
oh, I'm telling you, we had such a wonderful time. I can't wait to go back because I know there'll be another press trip, and I absolutely loved it there. There's so much for me to write about. This is going to be like a series in the Queen's Times. I really have to do that. But I want to get back on it as to like the fillings because I see you have like blueberries and when you say and cream,
yeah,
that means
cream cheese.
Okay, so you got blueberries and cream, chocolate chip and cream.
Yeah.
Red raspberries and cream, strawberries and cream, cherries, pecans, pineapple, just blueberry without, or red raspberry without. Then there's the
right.
one that I got. You got brownies and cream with a chocolate icing. Oh, my God. Apricots, cinnamon sugar and pecans, apple. Okay. This is like you can really go to town on these things. And a regular size serves 8 to 10 people. Mm. So you got to get all these people together and hope and one of them. But one of the things you do, I want to let people know, just so people know, that when mine arrived, there was a little thing stuck to it that said, caution, plastic baby in cake. So people would understand. And it also comes with some beads. You get some Mardi Gras beads and Mardi Gras money.
Yeah.
To toss at the person.
Cheap plastic doubloons.
You get what?
Plastic doubloons. Mardi Gras doubloons.
Oh, is that what they call them? Doubloons?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Doubloons. Okay. And that's, you ought to make some tradition with that as to, like, who gets the doubloons. You know, to the people who got closest to the baby.
Okay.
Gets the doubloons. So tell me about, like, how, so you start making these king cakes. Okay, to get back to this, so you're starting like the 12th day after
we
Christmas?
We start virtually the first working day of January. Our king cake season starts.
Wow.
Definitely it starts on the 12th day, which is, what, about the 7th or 8th? And and I mean, we go clear through. We still are. We'll be shipping king cakes probably through the end of this month, but the heavy duty stuff is like the 2 or 3 weeks prior to, and through Mardi Gras. And then it drops off significantly. But
well, I'm
it's a,
telling
a big season for us, and you know, it lasts anywhere from the shortest season we had was like 5 weeks. And Mardi Gras was unbelievably early a couple of years ago, like February 7th or something like that, and that's about
wow.
as early as it can possibly get. And then it'll run into mid-March. Traditionally, it ends sometime in February.
Do you think it makes a difference, like, if, I mean, I'm not sure, does every city in Louisiana do Mardi Gras?
I don't know what.
Or
well, a lot of the cities do Mardi Gras, some on a much larger scale, such as New Orleans.
Right.
You know, Freeport basically has like 3 or 4 parades, 2 major parades. Where New Orleans, you can go down there, geez, I think for the last 2 weeks, and there's a parade every day.
Right, yeah.
And then on the weekends, they have the big major parades. But a lot of the small towns around have their own little Mardi Gras thing.
Yeah, because I think I saw, like, there was some alternative places, I think, with press trips. There was something to Houma.
Houma?
Houma, yeah.
Yeah.
And then it was, I think, Lake Charles. Is that another one?
Yes.
Yeah, so I saw that. And, of course, you know, I never heard of either place until... You know, they got a thing about a press trip,
huh?
And then they're having a Mardi Gras. Yeah.
Right.
So there must be a lot of places in Louisiana making king cakes, I guess, huh?
Oh, yes. That's for sure.
So what about now, when it's not king cake season, what's your biggest sellers? Because this is yours is not just for king cake.
Oh, well, we do, you know, locally, a lot of cakes, pies, cupcakes, pastries. We have a cafe as part of the bakery, and we serve lunch every day. So we have other things that keep us going throughout the year.
So you have even some food, too, huh?
Oh, yes.
But basically, when you're walking in, it's you see all bakery stuff.
Yes.
So,
yeah, all the display cases are with the baked goods and then the ice cream that we carry. And
how long has Julianne's been open, by the way? Been around?
Oh, let's see, about 16, 17 years now.
Wow.
Opened in 92, I believe it was, 92 or 93.
She must have some reputation, I guess, huh?
Well, it
a good one, I mean.
We think so, and we're thankful for that, and we work hard at that.
6-5.
You know, to stay in business. It started out as, you know, it's just a family business, and one shop, and it's all done here.
Do you ever have, like, a... king cake or what do you call it, the contests? Do they ever do that there? Like,
no.
No, you don't do, like, companies like, You know, to see who's got the best king cake or...
Okay. No, we've never knowingly been a part of one.
Or they don't do something in the... Well, they should do as an event, a king cake tasting.
Yeah, okay.
How many... But basically, in Shreveport itself, how many... approximately, how many companies there, like, if you... Or places, can you actually go to... where they make their own king cake?
I would guess 5 or 6.
Okay. And have you gone to all of them yourself and tasted the other ones? I'm just curious.
No.
Oh. So in other words, when I go back, I'll have to do that.
There you go.
You're leaving that to me.
Absolutely.
And we'll have to see what size baby each of them
right.
has as well. Well, it's
okay,
interesting.
Well, Meryl, I got a little thing I got to take care of right now. I'm going to have
okay.
to bail. But I
okay.
appreciate your time and
sure.
nice hearing from you and look forward to your next trip.
Okay, and we can catch you at juliansbakery.com, right?
That's it.
Okay. Thanks
Thank
a whole bunch.
So much.
And have a great evening.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'll have another piece. I probably will. But, you know that there's a song, Please Don't Eat the Daisies. Well, this is Please Don't Eat the Baby. Of course, my humorous brain is going through a lot of stuff about this, which I will have to reserve maybe for writing in my blog as opposed to talking about on the radio. Well, in that case, since we've gabbed about some of the places in Shreveport that the food places, I am going to end my show early, and I'm going to first have some normal food first and then have another small slice of the king cake. Next week, I think, what am I doing next week? You know, I forgot what I'm doing next week. I will have a show. And, I'm hoping to get some, actually to do some more on, Dutchess County, on the places that I went to. And also I'm going to be able to talk about, I'm going to do this thing with what I call Chefski. This is when I went to the boot camp, and the chef is going to be sending me recipes of healthy cooking. I will, be able to talk about that. And so until then, until next week, she's coming in here. Yes. I know, I understand. Well, I can't tell you about it. It'll be a surprise. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, as I said, until next week, have a great day or whatever you do.